Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, many, many years ago, there was a war. It was called the Great War, World War I. From this war stems two things that are still commonplace to this day. The phrase, shooting yourself in the foot, and Uncle Sam pointing, saying, I want you. Sadly, both of these things have something in common with Celtic's performance last night in their 1-1 draw with FC Midtjylland in the Champions League. Welcome along to the Hull Breakdown. We are the podcast that look at the stats, the performance and analytics of Celtic Football Club. I'm joined on the line, as always, by Alan Morrison, a.k.a. Celtic Bank Numbers. Alan, hello.
Hello.
And I'm joined on the line as well by Juco James, a.k.a. Juco James. James, how are you?
Hey, guys. Good.
So, appointing a red card, a 1-1 draw in the Champions League to FC Midtjylland. Let's start with that red card, Danir Beaton sending off. He was already booked. He got a second yellow card for putting his hands in the face of one of the FC Midtjylland forwards after he dived in the penalty area. James, I'll let you have the first word on this. What was he thinking? Or are you even surprised that this was near Beaton?
Not terribly surprised. I still have questions as to the details, meaning that people have been talking about how the ref yellow carded the Midtjylland player for the dive. I'm not sure that's been clarified, meaning that the Midtjylland player physically bumped into Beaton, which kind of precipitated the finger into the head, right? So you kind of give the Midtjylland guy a little bit of credit, so to speak, for being a bit of a provocateur that really drew that out of Beaton, I would say. Because up until he kind of shoves into him, I don't think Beaton was going to lose it. And I think that's what really precipitated the losing it. So it was a clear dive, I thought. I mean, the guy went down. We saw subsequent to that when he was sent off. I mean, the guy seems to be pretty adept at that. It's inexcusable. I mean, it's just, I can understand it, meaning that in the heat of the moment, it's not excusable, but I can understand, given the fact that it got physical. His first yellow is the one that I think is kind of vintage Beaton, which is, positionally bad against a better opponent. We've talked about this over and over. And he ends up having to drag a guy down because he's overly aggressive and in a bad position, in a bad spot. So, it's kind of the compounding of the two. I think the first one's probably the symptomatic of the more significant problem as far as why he's playing, what got us to the point where he's playing against that quality of an opponent. And this is coming from someone who's probably been on the forefront of pro Beaton as far as a depth piece at center back relative to, playing like against bottom six teams as part of a rotation domestically. But that is not the same as playing in that kind of game against that level of an opponent. And, I think a lot of the attention obviously goes to the second one for good reason, but I think it's the first one that's as important to consider as far as what it means.
Alan, there was a lot of discussion about whether the play should have went that far. And there's a lot of confusion around why the linesmen keep their flags down, but eventually it does lead to this dive and Beaton's reaction. But one thing that I do want to point to with you, and it happened against Rangers as well. And it's something that you pointed out about Nir Beaton in general, is when everything is in front of him, he's fine. But as soon as the thing, as soon as the play gets in behind him, which it can do, that's where he really struggles.
Yeah. So I'd like to talk about both cards because I think they're both relevant, and actually they're both relevant to a wider conversation on how Postecoglou is going to set Celtic up. Because the first card occurred, and if you notice how high Celtic's line was when they could, a lot of the play in the first half especially, we probably got conditioned to Celtic sort of struggling to play out from the high press. But once they did that, their default will be to play a very high line. So Beaton was positioned on the halfway line. Now, given his propensity to not be positioned correctly and to make poor decisions and when to challenge for the ball, that caught him out for that yellow card, which was, it was a dreadful piece of defending, actually. But the reason that he was so high, one of the reasons he was so high, is because of that's the way that Postecoglou wants to play. So that suggests that Beaton is not a good match for playing that high line, because his lack of positioning means that it's only a split second and he has to make a decision, because the opponent is gone into an open field if he lets him go. And you know, Beaton's lack of concentration and poor positioning in that general centre defence means that that's a real risk, which means he's then going to concede a lot of these fouls, which are inevitably going to bring a card. So that puts him under pressure. The second yellow card stems from a very similar position, because again, Celtic are right high on the halfway line, and for the first time, I think the only time in the game, the officials fail to spot that Dreyer is a good 2 yards offside, and it's absolutely typical that Celtic are on the end of, you know, that have to, made to pay for such a poor decision. We see it time and time again in Europe. It's, you know, and I feel sorry for Postecoglou that's on the end of such a poor decision. That's not to excuse Beaton. I mean, you know, it's inexcusable what he did. He knows that if you, you know, strike an opponent or, you know, touch an opponent in the face, that you're going to get that sort of sanction. But the problem started was because the player was actually offside, again, because of this high line. Now, this is a risk. Both of these things are now that we've talked about, this is a risk of what's going to happen under Postecoglou until we've got players that are A, suitable to play that system, and B, they're practiced in it. Now, Celtic caught Mitterlund offside 5 times, and actually it should have been 6, in the first half alone. Last season, the opposition was caught offside an average of less than 2 times per game. So that immediately shows you that change in emphasis. Now, there's lots of risk there. Another risk is when we look at the Scottish domestic game and you know, Scottish referees and linesmen's propensity to show discretion in certain circumstances, we can see this is going to be a bit hairy on occasions playing this high line. I wouldn't say Beaton was a victim of that, but he's not well suited to playing in that particular defensive alignment for those reasons. And then he lost the discipline.
Can I ask a quick question? Do we know whether that game, because I don't, is there information, do we know that that game was under VAR or not?
It was not. In terms of the refereeing, by the way, I thought the refereeing was excellent overall. And one of the reasons I say that is, if, you know, during the European Championships, the refereeing was commented on a lot. There was a slight change of emphasis in how the games were refereed. VAR was used a lot more the system was far better implemented than it is in England, for example.
Right.
And the refereeing was a mixture of a lot more common sense in terms of a lot more what we used to call soft fouls, or players going down under any contact was just ignored. And that really did. And we saw that last night. A lot of soft fouls or contact, even on Celtic players, was ignored. And you know, sometimes rightly so. And the fact that Dreyer was picked up for those dives is another example. So I think generally the refereeing was excellent. But a couple of things that weren't in line with the European Championship type refereeing was, the one is missing that offside. And also in the thing that might have actually got Beaton in a very poor state of mind was the fact he got absolutely creamed after about 7 minutes, had to go off, get stitches. His face was a mess. Now, I don't think it wasn't deliberate. The guy didn't even see him. But the point was he went into an aerial challenge like this. Now, in the European Championships, intentional or not, that was a yellow card. Always. That was always a yellow card. And that didn't happen in this game. And not, I don't think it would have any impact on the game overall, but I'm just saying that was one of the few examples of a slightly different approach. But overall, I'm saying the refereeing was very good.
That's great context. I'm sorry. And real quick, so the because I don't think even under a VAR regime, given the sequencing of events, if the official did not call him for a dive, which I actually don't think he did, I think the yellow was from the physical contact. I'm not sure the offside would have been reviewable because it wasn't quote unquote missed that result. It didn't result in a shot. It didn't result in a penalty. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even sure that the offside would have been reviewable. So that's why I was saying I didn't know whether or not VAR was even being used, because I didn't think it would have been reviewed anyway.
No, yeah. It was not. And I think your interpretation is probably spot on.
Yeah. Okay.
The only difference the VAR makes to that situation is if VAR wasn't in action, which we believe that it wasn't, the linesman should have flagged it for offside before the play progressed to the point. Whereas if VAR was in play, the linesman was correct to keep his flag down until the game played on and finished out that sequence of play. So there's much more to this game than the one decision. So I guess why we started with the Beaton red card was because it had such a big impact. But defensively, Celtic set up with the back four that you predicted about January, Alan. It was Anthony Ralston at right back with Stephen Welsh near Beaton in the centre and Greg Taylor playing as the left back. Interesting for this, and one thing that, you know, immediately stands out is the role of the fullbacks that Celtic were playing in Ralston and Greg Taylor. They're playing as inverted fullbacks. They're coming into the center trying to get on the ball. I know you were interested in this but also frustrated by it, so explain why.
No, I'm not frustrated by it yet. Frustration is probably too strong. I think it's an interesting thing to do, right? But it's also a really hard thing to do well. Mm. And it's going to take a lot of time for it to be implemented successfully. And what is frustrating is that currently Celtic don't actually have the players to implement it successfully, as we saw last night. So, I mean, essentially for those, you know, inverted fullback sounds all very kind of hipsterish, right? But essentially what it is, think about it in two scenarios. So when you're defending, by bringing the fullbacks in, traditionally what you do is you play the ball out to the fullbacks, and then the fullbacks are immediately, you'll have the wingers trying to sort of block off passing channels wide or back inside, and obviously the fullbacks can only go either backwards or down the line usually, so they're very limited. If you can get the ball to somebody deep who's actually in the middle of the park, you've got 360 degrees to work with in terms of you've just opened up a huge variety of passing angles. And you also then give the wingers a real problem, because if they come in and follow the fullbacks, then what happens is that your own wingers are then essentially one-on-one with their wingers. And that's why Postecoglou wants fast wingers, because he wants to get Abada, and Forrest and so forth. He wants to get them one-on-one with the opposition fullbacks. When you're attacking, what it does is very similar. It allows your central midfielders to push on further, and that gives the opposing centre backs a real problem as to whether to come or go. And if one of them does come, then the centre forward can run in behind, and it also again potentially isolates the wingers high up the pitch. So it's a really, really interesting and useful thing to do. But the in commentary last night, Michael Stewart kept mentioning Bayern Munich under Guardiola. That's great, right? Because Guardiola had Alaba and Lahm as his fullbacks, both of whom are capable of and have played central midfield international level. So they're tremendous footballers. We've got Ralston and Taylor, right? So we actually ended up in the ridiculous situation where Welsh and Beaton, who are both far better passers of the ball than Ralston and Taylor, are out wide. And Ralston or Taylor in the centre, essentially playing a centre midfield role to try and build the play, and neither of them are adept. Now, it's not just they're adept, they don't physically move fast enough. Their body shape, their technical first touch, and their vision isn't sufficient to play that role. So, I mean, that's why Guardiola played Fabian Delph as a left back, because Fabian Delph's essentially a central midfielder. That's why he plays Zinchenko as a fullback. Zinchenko's a central midfielder. And the reason is to overload that midfield and push everyone else further forward. So you need the right players, is what I'm saying, to play that. So it was very interesting that they tried it so much, especially in defensive transition last night. But it didn't really work because the two guys who are coming in are not able to play the ball quick enough. And some of it was just about pass selection, because you've got to be brave on the ball. And the way Mitterland was set up was not unusual, right? They've got three forwards pressing high, they've got a zonal defence, and then they've got man-to-man in midfield. So, you know, your midfielders, your McGregors, your Christies, your et cetera, Sorrow even, are going to Turnbull, are going to be marked. If you're in that central position trying to transition, you've got to have the confidence to give these players the ball under pressure. You can't wait for them to be free. They're not going to be free. So you pass to the outside foot. Because the way where Celtic got so much joy yesterday is when they did break the press, especially when Sorrow was on the ball, McGregor, Christie, Turnbull were so much better technically than the Midland players. They could take it under pressure. And then with speed, they were able to break at them and actually look really dangerous. But the two fullbacks, they're not used to playing. If they think, oh, he's marked, I'm going to go backwards. They just don't have that vision and that confidence.
Yeah, the brave aspect of it is it's always a word that's thrown out. But what I quantify as brave quite a lot of the time is just taking it and turning with the ball and being brave enough to, take that extra touch and get your head up and find the pass. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, Greg Taylor and Anthony Alston hopefully won't be the fullbacks for the whole season. So if you get players in that can do that job, I think it can be very effective against teams in Scotland that wouldn't be used to playing against it. You're listening to the Huddle Breakdown. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to drop us a comment and we'll get to some of those a little later on in the show. James, before we move on to the midfield, because, I mean, defence was a really interesting one last night with Stephen Welsh, who a lot of people online thought was man of the match. Himself and Murray did quite well when Beaton did eventually leave the field. So what was your thoughts?
To add on to what Alan said, I took yesterday as beginning evidence of system over talent. So while there were certainly aspects of it that most definitively didn't work, I think there's reasonable consensus that the fullback fit isn't all that great for the system, is that the narrowness and just having bodies central resulted in, when that didn't work, that we didn't have this, I joked a lot last season, it was like we had a parking lot in midfield in defensive transitions. And that was as much about, how we were set up and how the people were ill-suited on top of that. Here, and the vulnerability that created. Whereas here, even if we don't have the perfect personnel or ideal personnel for the system, because it's narrow, that's, more robust. Think about it, it's like a more robust structure to build upon. And while the build-up play was a little lacking at times, and Taylor had that one kind of high-profile giveaway centrally, I think Welsh had one that was, they ended up slide tackling to win possession back. But, it was a little hairy at times, but we had bodies present. And I actually looked at the kind of the entry map today. I didn't share it in my good and the bad and the ugly thread, but Mitchelland really only had one entry into our box that was central. And it was, what's it? What was the guy that dove? Deaver, the guy got sent off. Dreyer. Yeah. He had one kind of box entry from just outside the 18 as kind of this little left footed lob that didn't really come to anything. But outside of that, they literally had nothing centrally. Everything else was from way wide, kind of early crosses. And this comes back to, I don't know how much of this derives from just style of play, philosophy, how much of it's fueled by analytics. I know that a lot of the analytics heavy clubs, like let's say the Red Bull franchise, you look at how Jesse Marsh plays, it's all about staying narrow and having that robust defensive resilience to transitions, and then using that central dominance to then fan out when you do gain possession and start central and go wide rather than staying wide and then trying to collapse in when you lose the ball. So I think generally speaking, I mean, you know, depending on who your data vendor or source was, I mean, it was basically three chances for really low XG. I mean, they had three shots, and it's not like they had a plethora of other buildup attacks where it just didn't quite come off for them. I mean, for the most part, I think Celtic dominated that game. Even so that, you know, what was it, 12 or 15 minutes when we were down a man after the Beton send-off before their guy was sent off, they still didn't even really get that much in threat. So to me, that's the optimistic part, which is, you know, we have a structure, it looks like, a style of play that's going to be resilient defensively. And if we upgrade the talent and the fit relative to the system, then, you know, there's a lot to be optimistic. And I think Ange's comments after the game where he spoke to, you know, preparedness. I mean, this was some of the speculation and what I was worried about going into the game. You know, who was he going to select relative to who's been there during preseason and guys like Christie, who basically had no time in his camp to get, you know, kind of up to date with what's going on. I mean, we're talking maybe a week to 10 days and very little actual, you know, friendly time on the pitch. So given all of those issues, I mean, I come away from yesterday incredibly positive relative to things that Ange can control in the game. What's going on with recruitment and all that other stuff is a totally different conversation. But, you know, I think it was really positive.
Alan, I think you wanted to come in there at one stage, did you?
Yeah, sorry. No, I was just going to kind of just another part of the inverted fullback tutorial. Apologies. Is that what James has said? Absolutely spot on. So, but the other aspect of it is from a defending a transition. If you lose the ball, is that once your fullbacks are narrow, you've essentially got a little box. It's like a bit like a basketball formation where you've got your six, your two fullbacks in front of the six normally, and then the two centre backs behind, and that's going to be in a central position. And it's very oversimplistic to say that, you know, teams like Man City, or they attack with five, they defend with five, but broadly from a principal perspective, that's kind of what you're trying to do. So it does mean that when you you know, when you do lose the ball, you've got that solid central five, crucially that central five, and it does make it. And in fact, what was telling is in the first half, despite the high line, not a single Celtic defender was packed, as in they were taken out by a forward pass in the whole 45 minutes. That's remarkable. Now, apart from Biton, but that it was off, the guy was offside, so I'm not even going to count that, right? No, Mitterland were not attempting to build the play in any shape or form. They were not trying to work combinations and triangles. They would get the ball and they would put it forward. And that probably also accounts for some of the offside stats that I mentioned earlier. So you need to take that into account. But I would agree with James in terms of, you know, considering the personnel and considering the time and considering the fact that Welsh and Biton have literally been on the pitch, well, 90 minutes together before today, and it's only 44 minutes since, that was pretty good defensive performance, really.
Yeah, I thought overall it was really promising for large chunks of the games. I'm a bit of a, you know, I could spend hours watching training videos from drone footage of high quality teams, and I got given out to by somebody in the comments saying I used too many examples from the English Premier League, so I'll use Julian Nagelsmann as the example for this. When he was at Leipzig, he sets up the entire pitch with squares, and the whole way up there's squares down the lines or square down the middle, and essentially the idea of it is everybody's done the drills where there's two guys in the middle, there's a square around them, and they're passing the ball around them. It's now you've got squares set up around the pitch and triangles within those squares. That's basically what they're trying to create going forward with those inverted fullbacks. But I do want to talk about the midfield, because I mean there's so much interesting stuff, especially Ismail Asaro's role and how well he played last night. But I want to get your thoughts on Abada, before he was taken off after Nir Bidon's red card. I thought he was really impressive and showing some real signs of a good winger / striker. And James, what did you make of his first competitive game for Celtic?
I thought it was reflective of kind of his data profile, actually, which was... He wasn't terribly active or involved in build up that much, meaning that he you know, when he was involved, he sure as hell did something. So he had two pretty good crosses that were both kind of on target. A little, you know, that's where we get into XG and XA models. I think Y Scouts were a little high on both those chances because of, you know, Christy having to kind of reach for him. Yeah, his finish was great. Right place, made a good run to get in for a rebound. I mean, all of that's really positive. Kind of his end product type of output was great. I think that the question for him is going to be more of that one-on-one, actually beating a man in space, getting involved in those triangles, the creative aspect. And we didn't really see any of that or much of that. So it's his first game. I mean, scoring goals in big games is huge. I mean, that's obviously a huge part of this as a forward. But, you know, I think as with any of these new players, I mean, to go crazy in one game, let alone just 45 minutes in a game, I mean, he obviously had a huge role in the game. But we're going to have to see that play out a little longer. Encouraging, reflective. And it looks like there's a lot to work with there. But there's work to be done, I think.
Alan, anything you want to say about the forward line or Abada in general?
Yeah, I largely agree. I mean, I loved his the angle of his run and his positioning and his timing for the goal. I mean, I know it's, you know, he scored a goal, so you'll think it looks great after the fact, but actually that's a really intelligent position to have taken up anyway. And it's not always that wingers do that. And I think Christie's got an instinct to be running into those channels as well. So I think that was actually a real surprise. I've never done recall seeing Christy play on the left wing before, so that was really refreshing. I don't believe his creativity statistics, his XA, was particularly high. So to have him set up two, I mean, the cross for Christy's header was exceptional. Both were great crosses, really. So that was encouraging to see. But I think that's going to, again, reflective of the way that Postecoglou is going to expect him to play. That build-up play, I don't think is going to be as important. I think he's going to be expected to try and get himself wide and isolated against the fullback, and then either make diagonal runs inside, or be you know, dragging the fullback when he's on the other side. Because one of the consequences of inverted fullbacks is, and these one-to-ones, is that switch is always on. So the wingers do have to maintain good width, but they should then get that one-to-one ability to be one-to-one with their opponent. So that's what we'll be looking for him for. I thought he was unlucky to be taken off. Again, I was reflecting on this today, thinking it would, and I know he's only 19 and it's his first game, so it made absolute sense for him to be sacrificed. But I do wonder, to have taken off Turnbull and left Abada on and had that, just that searing pace through the middle, dropping Christy back, made absolute sense. I think that could have been very interesting.
Yeah, I was disappointed to see him coming off as well, because he looked like the most dangerous player the Celtic had on the pitch, or the one most likely to break that final line. Definitely didn't seem like Edouard was going to be the focal point. So I wouldn't have minded seeing Turnbull, who was limited in what he was doing for a good reason, because Michelin did shut him down well. You know, sacrifice a player in midfield, especially when you're playing those inverted fullbacks, right? Because that's the point of them, is to provide more people in there, whereas you are losing a man going forward by taking Abada off. Some of the comments coming in on YouTube, McGov E is saying that one of the positives in this season and from last season is that he cannot wait to see Celtic playing again. Last year, he dreaded every game. Rory is saying that Abada looks like a great talent, which I think most of us agree with. And Ghastly Boz Songs is saying, fantastic boys, I'm way too rewinding to the beginning, looking forward to this. There's a lot.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Way back, if you want to skip the stuff about the red card, there's about 20 minutes worth of that in the at the very start. So, but let's talk about the midfield. Cal McGregor was the captain last night for the first time, played a very key role. Turnbull, like I said, I think he was limited a little bit to what he could do. But I'm interested in Ismail Asaro, because we identified him as a player who could be really good for this system and someone who didn't get enough game time at all last season. James, he is going to play a key role, mainly for me. I don't know if you want to point to something else, but breaking, just taking the ball and breaking the first line with a run, taking three or four touches and using his pace to get past players is something that I was really impressed with last night.
I think the combination of the narrow system and having a functional 22 or 23 year old midfielder in that role is goes a long way, meaning that I actually shared it in my thread this morning. I compared his total actions map from the game yesterday to Browns against Copenhagen in the 3-1 loss. And it's stark how central he is and narrow he is in on the pitch. You don't get the outliers that you got with Brown. It's called, when we mentioned earlier about the transitions and the benefits of having a narrow system. But it's just that raw athleticism. He's not a big guy. He physically is probably not going to be dominant in heads up duels. I suspect he'll probably be okay in that regard. But the fact that he just has quickness, pace, and he's willing and to take a little bit more of a risky profile, you know, he's willing to dip his shoulder and kind of make blind turns and deal with it. And again, with a narrow system, he's got the people behind him that if that goes wrong, it's not disaster necessarily. And his ability to make, I mean, he made some really good bursting runs. His vertical passing right away, we saw last season, is aggressive. The touch is a little fleeting at times, it appears, but maybe that can improve under a good coach. So I think the most important thing, as we talked about most of last season, is the unburdening of McGregor, meaning playing that single pivot and allowing us to have those 2 8s or an 8 and a 10 where we're not having to kind of come back and support the other six like we most of the season last season, and I would argue probably 2.5-3 seasons that was taking place. Turnbull, I think, is interesting. I've been probably more on the skeptical side with Turnbull at this level, and I think yesterday was reflective of that. They man-marked him and McGregor to a large degree, as Alan said, and I'm still skeptical that Turnbull's athletic enough at that level to deal with comparable European level athletic midfielders, meaning that when he's got space, people are defending zonally, like we'll face a lot domestically. Either they're not as good athletically, they're not as elite athletically, or they're going more zonal and there's space for him to operate. He's unbelievably good on the ball and technically, but I think he only had 4 or 5 forward passes yesterday. So he was getting into space. He was recycling possession. He was turning, distributing the ball, but a big part of his value is going to be creative and creating chances for teammates. And I think that's between him struggling a little bit, I think, with the man marking and, you know, who we have playing those kind of inverted fullback roles. I think that was part of why Edouard was pretty isolated. And we've seen that. That's been an issue with him pretty frequently in Europe over the last couple of seasons, you know, even back to 1920. So that's kind of my take on McGregor was McGregor. I mean, it's just wonderful to see him in a functioning system. he's so good. And I think that this looks, you know, really ideal for him. So my concerns, Turnbull in that kind of eight role at this level, again, in domestically and outside of Rangers, he's probably fine. It's just, as you get up into this better quality opponent that I have my concerns.
Yeah. I think Turnbull will be fine and he'll improve once Celtic have a better right back, because I think the stark difference for me compared to McGregor, and they're basically playing the same role. It's not the exact same, but it's basically the same, is that Greg Taylor and Cal McGregor were much more interchangeable. You saw Cal McGregor popping up loads of times on the left wing and getting on the ball that way, because Greg Taylor was more efficient in his role as the inverted fullback than Ralston was. Alan, what was your thoughts of Turnbull and Cal McGregor and the roles that they were playing?
Sure. So I just want to be a little bit contrary on Turnbull, because I've only captured the first half myself, but you know, he created three key passes in that half, and you know, Abada's two chances that he created for Christie were far better quality, but you know, nobody created more chances than Turnbull three, and also he had two secondary assists. So I think both Abada passes may have come from Turnbull passes leading to the cross. So I think he did actually, and the goal, the actual goal, I don't know if you recall, but the ball was played into Turnbull and he was under pressure and stretching, and he managed to get
over to Christie.
He managed to get it over to Christie and keep the momentum of the move going, and that was absolutely crucial, because that pass completely disorientated the whole defence. So I and that was an example of him playing under pressure. So I would kind of balance it with that, I suppose. I know it's only one moment, but it doesn't invalidate what James has said. But I do think he'll grow into that role. But, and I take the point well made that with better support around him, especially from the fullback areas, you know, that you create those virtuous triangles, I guess, is really what the system's trying to do. You know, if one of those triangles is, you know, you get the ball to McGregor and everyone's like, yes, they get the ball to Turnbull, yes, and then it goes to Ralston and everyone's like, oh. I'm probably the same as everyone else, you know, there's certain players get the ball on the opposition, you think, oh god, they've got the ball, oh no, they're in the final third, and you know, Ralston gets the ball in the final third, you're probably thinking, phew.
Yeah, do you know what's funny? I was listening to Ben Foster on a podcast recently, and he said one of the most heartbreaking things is when the ball's passed back to him and he can audibly hear the fans get worried about him having the ball. And he said it's the most heartbreaking thing. And I would imagine Anthony Ralston would have felt the same if there were more than 9,000 fans in the stadium last night. Look, I don't want to be too harsh on him. He's 22 years old. He's played one game in over maybe 400 days, like over a season and a half, he's played one game. So, I mean, he didn't do awful for a player who hasn't played as much as he has.
No, I mean, there was no real bad mistakes. Like I say, you know, he held his position well. The guy that he was up against, Sisto, is probably their most, you know, revered player in terms of, you know, reputation. And he's very quick. And obviously playing that high line requires great coordination and discipline, you know, across the defence, and he played his part in that. It's just, he can't help what he is. He's just a limited footballer. I'm sorry, that's cruel, but we're here to be analytical, and he's just not a player that is of the quality that Celtic need to be playing at this Champions League level. And the guy tries his heart out. It's like Greg Taylor. I love Greg Taylor because he's always trying to improve. He genuinely, you saw him last season trying to get that yard away from the defender, trying to push himself. And it worked to some extent, but it will work at a certain level, but over a certain level, it won't work because you physically don't have the tools to be able to play at that level.
Yeah.
And Ralston's very similar in that regard. I think Taylor's, you know, has more utility across the season. But yeah, no harm to the kid at all. It's just evident, I think, that he's not the standard that's needed.
Yeah, that, I mean, what can you do really, except, you know, work as hard as you possibly can. And I mean, I don't doubt that he will try that. We're 37 odd minutes into this podcast. It's the Huddle Breakdown. If you're listening or you're watching on YouTube, be sure to hit the subscribe button below and the like button as well. If you want to see more of us, you can subscribe to the channel. You can subscribe to the Huddle Breakdown as well on Spotify or iTunes, and you can follow us at Huddle Breakdown on Twitter. 38 minutes in, and I haven't mentioned Barkas. I think that's on purpose, because FC Midtjylland obviously equalized from a free kick, and Barkas has been getting the extent of the criticism for this. And I mean, rightly or wrongly so, that's what I want you to debate. Alan, I know you were looking on Twitter there. Was it a bad save from him? Was it a bad attempt from him? Did he try to do the wrong thing? So I'll let you talk us through what you think went wrong here for Barkas.
Sure. So, yeah, I did on Twitter really was, one of the great benefits of Twitter is having access to people who are experts in certain fields. And I follow a couple of goalkeeping coaches who are experts in studying goalkeeping technique. And I'll tell you what, it's complicated. And there's an awful lot to it, more than you'd think. I'm no expert in it, so I thought I'd ask an expert. So I didn't give him any context because I didn't want to prejudge it. Just said, here's the goal, tell me what you think. And his view was, you know, yeah, it's an error. It's a technical error. I mean, essentially what it boils down to very simply is that, you know, he's tried to punch the ball and he should have, and that was the wrong decision. He should have gone up with big hands rather than a punch, which immediately shortens your arms, by the way. Whereas if you go like that, you can get a greater extension. And the ball was whipped in with incredible pace, and he was unsighted, and it hit just the inside of the post and went in. You put all these factors together, I'm not excusing it, it's a mistake. He's made a mistake. And again, Celtic are in this situation that we've been in time and time again, where you're looking at the XG, you're looking at the shots, you're looking at the chances, and thinking, how the hell have we not won that game? And really, you know, we look back ourselves and think, we've seen games like that flipped on their head, and we've won 1-0 because Fraser Foster has actually made 7 saves. And that's what people think. And that's the comparison that's made. I completely understand that. So I'm not excusing Barkas. He's made a terrible mistake. But I believe that's the first really bad mistake leading to a goal that he's made. Now, others will tell you different because I think emotion gets in the way. He's blamed for every goal that the Rangers scored against him last season because people, I think, emotionally are so anxious about that, they have to displace this anger onto somebody, and bloody hell, Barkas, he's right for it. But actually, if you look at the goals that he conceded, there's no way they were his fault. So it's his first really high-profile howler, but again, he's not then backed that up with any other saves, because he didn't have to make any other saves, because there weren't any other shots. So he's in this position where, you know, I cannot argue that if you look at the data, and you look at the post-shot XG of shots that he's faced, and then you look at the number of goals that he's conceded, the number of goals he's conceded is larger than the number of goals he should have let in. And he hasn't made any great saves and had any great performances in high-profile games. I can't deny any of that, but then neither has he really made any particular mistakes. So I'm kind of in this position where I'm really thrown by the personal vindictive criticism that comes his way, because I just think it's childish and pathetic to hurl that much abuse at anyone, frankly. But also, I can't actually justify that he's particularly a great goalkeeper. So I'm kind of sat in this place of trying to give the guy the benefit of the doubt where I can, while still sort of being a little bit kind of on the fence as to whether I really think he's got a future.
Yeah, it's the endless question about Barkas. And we did a full special on Barkas being and how they compare to Fraser Foster. And Fraser Foster was just a freak of nature when it came to being a goalkeeper. But James, I will put this to you, because I know the numbers say that Barkas is not making more mistakes than he should do. But should a Celtic goalkeeper not be outperforming his XG?
I think this is a terrific intellectual discussion, because it introduces so much of how analytics are going to change and have been changing football and the fan experience within that context. So people are going to be biased in a variety of ways. It's just inherent for people. And one thing I'm seeing over and over again, the people that are just absolutely going you know, Tonto, as Alan has said about Barkas, is they default back to, you know, Forster, who, you know, clearly has been an excellent shot stopper when he's played at Celtic outside of, I guess, that first season. And that's an anchor. That's a cognitive anchor and bias, that's what a keeper is. I mean, you see that. You see people say, well, that's their job. They got to stop shots. Well, that's part of their job. And a bigger question that has to be considered, I think, is what is the role and the job within Ange's system? How do you value the different components of that job relative to net results, right? So how do you value what somebody like Barkas, and again, I don't have any great metrics on his build-up play, or this is all conceptual. I'm not saying this from a hard analytics perspective. Like, I have an answer to this. I'm just posing the question and the conceptual framework, which is there's going to be value in Celtic's keeper playing that high line, playing a quote-unquote sweeper keeper, their ability to be athletic and move around the pitch and distribute the ball relative to our attack and enabling our defenders and midfielders to play the roles that they're supposed to positionally within a system, right? So this comes back to the robustness of the system. There's going to be significant value in a keeper filling that role well athletically, that is above and beyond shot stopping. So the idea that you could plug a Fraser Forster into Ange's system and you're going to get a net positive relative to what Barkas is going to deliver, I think is highly questionable analytically, because is he going to be 40 yards from goal or approaching the midfield circle and being a ball playing keeper and create a system dynamic where the center backs and the inverted fullbacks and the midfielders are able to do their jobs and reliably so in that capacity. So I think it's a far more complicated question than, you know, Barkas is a crap shot stopper, therefore, you know, put Fraser Forster in. I think, or sign Fraser Forster. Unfortunately, I think that might be the mentality of some very senior people at Celtic from what I've heard. but I think it's, I would be shocked if Ange Postecoglou would look at somebody like Fraser Forster and said, that's the answer to my problem. I'm not saying Barkas is the answer either. What I'm saying is I don't see how it theoretically could even be Forster.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, and again, apologies to the guy who doesn't like me using Premier League references, but I mean, this is what I'm dragging from. I remember when Pep Guardiola first came to Man City, one of his first things was to get Joe Hart out of goals. And he brought in Claudio Bravo, who, you know, he was a disaster altogether. But the idea was that, you know, even though Joe Hart had a proven record as being a top quality goalkeeper, shot stopper, he couldn't play football. He could not play the system that Pep wanted to do. And Claudio Bravo, even though he was a worse goalkeeper, shot stopping wise, goalkeeping wise, basic goalkeeping needs, he was much better on the ball than Joe Hart was. So is Barkas good enough on the ball, though, from what you've seen, James?
Alan, you go ahead. You're going to have a better sense of that than me.
Well, yeah. No, just in fact, that was what was frustrating me last night. I mean, by halftime, he'd completed 18 passes, Barkas, for, you know, 24 if you include free kicks where he was just rolling it to the centre-half, 18 open play passes, and he'd given it away 9 times. His passing with his feet last night in the first half wasn't actually very good. So you know, again, I'm not defending Barkas by saying he's the answer. I absolutely reject the fierce and personal criticism, some of the fierce and personal criticism on a matter of principle. But I'm happy to debate the technicalities of the goalkeeping within the framework that James described. That's a grown-up conversation, and I don't know. I'm not convinced that he is the answer, but the actual answer is that Postecoglou needs to tell the scouts the attributes of the goalkeeper that he wants, and they need to find someone that fits it. And I suspect, if I very much doubt, as James said, that the answer is Fraser Forster. And I can keep going back to this point. When Fraser Forster was back on Celtic's radar at the beginning of the season before, before last, he was third choice at Southampton. Now, you know, there's enormous inefficiencies in the football market anyway. You're telling me across professional football clubs in Europe who generally will hold three goalkeepers at first team level, there isn't somewhere a completely unutilized, underrepresented, underappreciated goalkeeper who would broadly fit the profile that Postecoglou is? I'm pretty sure there will be, and a decent price point. You know, that's why signing Barkas for 5 million. I didn't agree with that. I'm sure you could have got somebody that would fit the profile, whatever the profile was when Lennon wanted a goalkeeper, for a lot less than 5 million. Even if it was another season loan, because the thing with goalkeepers is no one's going to recall them. You're going to get them for the season, so you've got a little bit of continuity there. So they just need to, if Barkas isn't the right answer, we need to get the right answer and be a little bit creative about where we find it, because I'm sure there's value out there.
The fact that Fraser Forster keeps popping up as somebody who is potentially coming in, I mean, I don't know what age he is, but he must be late 30s at this point.
33, I think he'll be 34 this coming season. Yeah.
So I mean, it's a little bit lazy for me, and especially if it's our scouts that are going back to Fraser Forster. I'm like, there's got to be somebody else out there that's as good as Fraser Forster. I mean, he wasn't the best goalkeeper in the world. I mean, there's bound to be someone somewhere that we can get that's as good as Shawstopper as Fraser Forster and better with his feet. I mean, all it takes is a little bit of scouting. Surely they're capable of doing that.
And this comes back to the concern for this window, as the club seems to be entering into, some have called it a rebuild. I think the squad is being rebuilt. I think that a lot of what's going on at the club is being built, meaning that a lot of it wasn't there or it's in such a condition that it's almost like starting from zero, from scratch, is, there's been enough reporting from different sources that I think, and it's speculating because obviously I'm not an inside guy and I don't know, but it seems like they're still working off of scouting and recruitment lists and information that existed before Postecoglou.
Oh no, they absolutely are, and right. I can confirm that because Postecoglou said as much when he was asked about Luke Shaw or Liam Shaw rather, and about Urgeda. He said that he got in, the scouts had him in a list, and that's what he's working off at the minute.
And those are the obvious ones. I think Starfelt's one that probably is off a list because again, I like him. We talked about him on a prior show, but I don't see how he pairs with Julian in a coherent fashion relative to Postecoglou. So he's probably off the list. I mean, the only one that we pretty much know is Furuhashi, that's an Ange pick. Outside of that, completely given the context of all the other activity that's been going on, someone who I don't know. I mean, we don't have a director of football. We don't have a head scout. We don't have a head of recruitment. So someone who's not Ange is saying, hey, let's go back to Forster and check, as if that's a good idea. I mean, it might be the same person that thought Duffy was a good idea. Who knows? But or the same people. So that's my biggest concern still, is that where's the coherent kind of facilitation of getting players out of the transfer market that makes sense into Ange's system and doing it in a timely way, which is pretty much done now. That's not going to happen. So now let's worry about fit. And Forster is not a fit. I think Alan and I would agree on that. I mean, it's just so far down the road from that. I mean, the idea that he's going to be coached up to a ball playing keeper at this age, I mean,
I just don't think, I don't think he's a match at all. I think it's just pure laziness to keep going back to the guy who was good for us in 2012, which was 8 years ago. So, I mean, we got to move on at some point. We got to find someone else at some point. That was Vasilios Barkas. Anything you just want to finish up on before we finish up on the review of the draw against Midtjylland?
No, I mean, I would just say, yeah, I mean, obviously, I was expecting another Art Media, I'll be honest. So that was a pleasant surprise. And now, of course, we go into the second leg with a bit of hope, and that's just even worse, right? I just can't deal with it. So, and without Biton, obviously. So, and we can't, I don't believe we can register any more players.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, we haven't registered for the first game. We haven't mentioned Murray, and I think he was very efficient outside of, you know, some pretty bad passes. So I think that's, you know, that's going to be a risk. I mean, the guy's 18 with no experience at this level. So given that context, I mean, I think the last thing I'll comment on, I wrote about it in my thread this morning. I just chuckle when at the disparity in narratives that take place. Alan mentioned this. I mean, the Barkas one's a clear one. Some people, you know, just despise him, and, you know, I agree with Alan that some of it's so over the top, it's crazy. Ralston gets a lot of the same. The opinion on him is anchored. And to me, if you just look at yesterday's game and in isolation, strictly kind of the relative input in performance levels in the game, I would argue that Ralston was comparable to Welsh, meaning that, you know, they both did some good things. They both had some rough times. Welsh's actually could have been what I would call higher leverage, meaning that going to ground around the box could have gone horribly wrong another time. It went bad one time that led to the goal, and another time that led to a good shot. But the gap in narrative coming out of the game of those two players, I just find, you know, a perfect example of these issues that we all deal with, which is, what's our bias? What are we, you know, what's the narrative that accompanies that bias based off of kind of our pre-existing thoughts on players? So I found, I always find endlessly entertaining as far as how extreme they can be. Because, I mean, Christie, we haven't mentioned Christie. I mean, Christie's performance yesterday was really, really good. I mean, he did a lot of really good things. His pressing, you know, his tracking back, his covering for Ralston when he went on as a right mid after we went to 4-3-2 or 4-4-1 or whatever you want to call it. I mean, he just had a really great game, but people are biased against him now, a lot of people. So, you know, he doesn't probably get as glowing of credit coming out of a game like that. And people focus on someone else to elevate. And, you know, I find it all so interesting and amusing.
Yeah. I mean, going into the game, I thought Celtic were going to lose and lose badly. I thought it was going to be another situation where it was like Cluj and, you know, it's dreary and depressing, nothing works. Whereas, you know, tactically, Celtic looked really good on the break. They looked really good. And one thing I would add as well is the first round of the Champions League qualifiers, Anthony Ralston, 22 years old, Stephen Welsh, what is he, 19, 21? You know, Murray came on, he's 18, 19. You've got Lil Abada, who's 19 as well, or 18. And I mean, like, that's an extraordinary inexperienced squad going up against a good functioning side. It was a pretty good performance. So, I mean, it gave me some hope going into the second leg of the qualifier, but not much hope, which is the worst thing about it, because last year killed all of the hope that I have. This was the Huddle Breakdown. It was the review of the 1-1 draw with FC Midtjylland in the Champions League. Thanks to everyone who dropped a comment in the YouTube channel below. I'll get back to you later on. And if you do want to subscribe to the channel, you get notified every time a video goes live. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can get us on iTunes or Spotify. And you can follow us on Twitter as well, at Huddle Breakdown. James, Alan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll be back again next week. But until then, good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.